Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. In the studio, joining me is Wong Ziyang, the co-founder of UpMesh. He travels up and down across Southeast Asia. He's here in KL just for a short while, perhaps visiting his local team here in Kuala Lumpur. Ziyang is, of course, from Singapore. UpMesh is a very interesting company that needs to be discussed. Let's talk about that, Ziyang. First of all, what is UpMesh? What do you guys do? And perhaps talk to us a little bit more about live commerce.
Understand. So, pretty much what we do is that we are enabling live commerce here in Southeast Asia, right? So live commerce is something that's up and rising. It's not just trending because of COVID, but it has seen huge drastic bounce and increases in consumer behavior for the past 3 years or so. And COVID kind of made that a norm now. Most people understand and know what is live commerce. They actually go shopping live by watching videos on Facebook, on TikTok, and many other platforms, right? So as a company, essentially what we do is that we service the sellers in the back end to make sure that all the inventory and order capturing goes well. Today we're live in 4 countries, so we're actually in Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore and Philippines.
Alright, let's talk about the moment that you guys created UpMesh. Before the interview, we were talking about how this company was born out of the pandemic. You are a string of companies that have done the crazy thing, which is to start business during the pandemic. In hindsight, it's not that crazy after all, isn't it?
It's actually a good thing, right? So because we had to work within such restricted circumstances, it's actually helping us to understand more about communication. And typically in a company that's already established, the communication lines are set in such a way that a lot of it's physical in nature. But because we had to start and almost run this through COVID, and it wasn't intentional, right? So my company actually launched in November 2020. At that point in time, the entire space and wasn't that affected yet. But then as we moved in, we really realized that, hey, we had to understand more about how to run teams remotely, how to do strategy at a very high level without seeing the faces of some of my country team members. So it's been difficult to coordinate that, especially as a new company. But at the same time, it lends itself to a lot of learning opportunities.
Because of that, there seems to be the tenacity and the resilience of you pushing forward in terms of growing your business during tough times. However, because of your business model, the pandemic actually assisted in the growth of the company. This has attracted you fundraising about $7.5 million pre-Series A, and there's more fundraising rounds that is in store. Do you feel that these venture capitalists are looking at the possibility of not trying to double down on the bet now that economy is opening up? Or where's the appetite considering that, you know, people are not necessarily looking forward, people are not necessarily hooked on live commerce all the way because economies are opening up?
So I think that's the misconception with my industry, actually, that this was a COVID-assisted boom. But what we look at and how the VCs are looking at it is actually what happened in China. So for the past 5 years, right, live commerce has been on the rise in China, and it's not something smaller anymore. 18% of their entire e-commerce GMV actually flows through live commerce. It's currently valued, the entire market and the volume that moves through it is at 300 billion plus now. So that's an insane amount of money. Right, the entire e-commerce space in Southeast Asia alone is half of that, which means that there's a lot of opportunity on the ground here. My own personal estimate is that live commerce is probably sitting at about $6 billion across Southeast Asia, but because there's no real tracking going on and there's no statistics to really point at how fast it's grown, people associate it as a COVID thing. But this was the case even before COVID for China, where lots of influencers, lots of people started selling products through the platforms there, through live videos. And the powerful thing about it, that it really boils down to the format. It's engaging, it differentiates products. There's a lot of stories to tell about that, really.
Let's go through, or let's run down the numbers per se. Whatever that's happening in China, it's important for us to understand. Is it replicatable in other markets, particularly when Southeast Asia is very diverse? Where would be the similarities lie? Where do you think markets would be completely different from that of China?
So the biggest challenge facing other countries right now is A, consumer behavior, and B, infrastructure. So especially for Southeast Asia, where we're not digital natives yet, right? So in terms of internet penetration, so across Southeast Asia it's 60%. In Malaysia it's about 80%, which is much higher than the norm. But at the same time, in terms of how people consume content online and how they actually spend, China is way ahead of everyone else, right? So probably most of the disposable income that a person enjoys within China actually goes towards spending online, right? As for Southeast Asia, in terms of the culture of spend, most of it is still reserved for necessities, you know, developing countries and the like. The other part of it that is other than consumer behavior is the infrastructure. So let me put it another way. To run a business in China, right, you can actually do things like send goods across China within less than 2 days. The standards that are acceptable there are much higher. But in Southeast Asia, in live commerce specifically, we are seeing potentially up to 2 to 3 months just to receive your product. So the infrastructure differences make it so that the growth is either slower or it needs a push or a step up in terms of infrastructure in order for it to succeed. And that's really where we come into the picture, right? So we're working on essentially building up the backbone of Southeast Asia's live commerce scene, allowing us to kind of step in and boost that ecosystem and make it grow.
How do you boost that ecosystem? Where is the value add that you bring in that value chain?
So first and foremost, the things that we started doing at first was very simple, right? We built a SaaS product that essentially helps the merchants to even collect orders. So before we came in the picture, how merchants were collecting orders was really quite difficult. They would write down the orders on masking tape, right? Whenever an order comes in through the chat, they'll actually write down the customer's name, paste it on the product, and then they'll put it aside. After the life is over, they spend about 8 to 10 hours just consolidating all the same customer names into a single basket. And then after that, they have to go and build a customer. So that process was entirely manual. And yet merchants were still able to hit very significant volume through that kind of approach. So we came in the picture and said, look, I can automate all of this for you with software. And our system essentially allows them to capture the comments that are happening in their live video. And if they ask their customer to type a specific keyword, let's say if you're trying to sell an Apple, the keyword could be APP plus one. We would actually turn that into a shopping cart and then link it to you so that you as a customer can check out.
And what has been the adoption rate and perhaps even the learning curve for these merchants in adopting these software applications?
It's actually very difficult for them and even sometimes their buyers because the live commerce scene has mostly grown on Facebook. Right, so it's been communities that are on Facebook that have been heavily invested into this culture of watching the live stream. Some of them, they will even come in on just Mondays without anything to do and just watch, even when they don't plan to buy anything. So the problem is that these people tend to be
recreational viewing.
Recreational, really. It's almost at a level where it's fanatical, I would say. And the interesting part is that they actually have to make payment online, which is something that, again, not all Southeast Asians are used to, that's one. And two, the demographic differences that are being served on each platform. If you're talking about TikTok, it's the younger audience, they know how to make digital payments. But if you're talking about the older audience, right? So my mom didn't even participate in e-commerce before I became a live commerce founder.
Yeah.
But she actually learned live commerce to watch some of my lifestyles. And that's something that has really changed how people interact. Right, so the challenges associated with that cannot be understated, but at the same time, we're taking them on because it's going to be, the end game is 100% internet penetration rate, right? Where everyone has access to the internet, everyone is going to be shopping online, and we are going to be one of the verticals or the areas that they would actually go through to shop.
All right, still a lot more to unpack here. I will go for a short break before continuing our conversation with Precious Wong Ziyang. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Ziyang of Upmesh. He's a co-founder there. Let's tie in back to that two notion of the essence of our conversation earlier, consumer behavior and the myth or the misconception that this is a COVID-led industry. Now that the economies are, I guess, fully open in many countries, particularly the countries that you guys operate out of, which is Philippines, Thailand, Malaysia, and Singapore, where is the delta in terms of the growth of people watching, viewing versus shopping? Any changes in trying to test that whole hypothesis of this isn't necessarily a COVID-led industry?
Mm. So for the most part, the entire industry has grown a lot because of COVID. That's definitely true, right? So we're not saying that it's a misconception in a sense that it's not boosted by COVID. But what we're trying to say is that actually all the trends point towards live commerce being something that's extremely important to e-commerce in general.
So still, before COVID, after COVID?
Yes, it doesn't matter whether COVID happened. Mm. The reality is that live commerce is good. So I'll explain a few pointers that would explain this phenomenon, right? So live commerce actually allows for differentiation to happen. And the way that it affects in emerging economies like Southeast Asia is actually very interesting. In China, they actually use live commerce to boost the income of rural villagers. They send in people who train the rural villagers to basically have farmers selling direct to consumer instead of going through the typical route of doing wholesale, right? If you are oranges,
so they want to cut the middleman, basically.
In a sense, but the more important part is actually differentiation. So here's an example, right? If you're trying to sell oranges, oranges are always the same, right? The ones you buy from the supermarket, the ones you buy from online, they're the same. But what live commerce does is that it allows the farmers to do funny things, right? For example, they can go to the trees that are in their orchard and they actually start plucking the oranges and putting it into the baskets. They actually sell the baskets at not just the retail price, but because you can see with your own eyes that the oranges were plucked from the tree, in your mind, you believe that it's fresher, right? And it arrives at your doorstep 3 days later. So you know that it is fresh. And even the numbering...
I would go for that, dude.
Exactly.
I mean, let me tell you that. I mean, but is it like premium pricing then?
It doesn't necessarily need to be premium pricing, but the key thing here is that it's enabling them to differentiate. And it happens not just for oranges, of course. You can do it for a variety of goods. You can do it for just about anything. And it enables small businesses to compete with the larger businesses. It also allows for more variety in the kind of things you want to buy. And the most important part about this is that it's brokered through the influencers and the people who are doing the live selling, who are actually putting their reputation on the line to say that a certain product is good, right? In a normal circumstance of shopping online, you can't tell if the product is good, and sometimes reviews can't be trusted. But in live selling, because you follow that influencer, you know their style, you know their taste, you know their standards, the past 5 things you've bought from them have been good, you're essentially trusting that that person is able to bring that same quality back to you for a different product.
So you were talking about trainers going to these rural places, training these individuals. Are they government mandated? Are they private enterprises? Who are they?
It's a mix. So as in China, of course. And again, that was, in fact, almost 5 years ago, which is why I say that this phenomenon is happening without COVID. Right? So think about it this way. Southeast Asia is basically where that was 5 years ago, right? We have a lot of developing countries. We have a lot of people who are still living in the rural areas. And imagine the kind of empowerment they'll get if we actually went and allowed them to do live selling, right? It's creating a side income for them. And it also monetizes their main mode of income better.
Sorry, this is quite interesting, but the fact that, you know, I'm hearing this for the first time and it's been around for 5 years. So are you doing something like that here in Malaysia, where you're activating the sellers that... I mean, Malaysia is not that rural. I mean, 70% is either urban or suburban. Mm. But I'm pretty sure Philippines, Thailand, that's going to be a big market to look at, right?
Exactly.
Are you activating ground teams to do this as well?
So the key thing here is the number of steps it takes to get there is still quite a lot, because the infrastructure on the front is still not ready yet, right? And remember, 1.5 years ago when my company launched, we were trying to get the sellers to understand that you shouldn't be collecting your orders manually.
Yeah, right? Through masking tapes, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and through that 1.5 years, we've accelerated the point where now it's the norm to collect orders through technology. But then now we have new problems, right, in terms of the supply chain. How do I get the oranges from, say, rural farmers all the way to the doorstep of the customer within 3 days? And there's other problems that they are facing as well in terms of, for example, capital access, right? Most people who run businesses in Southeast Asia, they have very little cash flow. So we are talking about an issue whereby you can purchase inventory, you do the live selling, but then it gets locked into the value of the goods. And before the products reach the customers, we even do things like, you know, cash on delivery in some countries, right? It's locked inside the value of the goods. So it's very hard to actually start your next live sale until your previous batch has sold out. So there are a lot of infrastructural things that need to be solved first. And definitely at some point, we're going to go down to, again, all of these small businesses and help them to grow bigger using these techniques, if you want to call them that. But ultimately, live commerce is here to stay.
Okay. Also, talk to us how the pre-seed funding of $7.5 million has been deployed. What's the fundraising plans moving forward?
Yep. So I think, as you may know, the business space right now, the markets in general are not in a good spot, right? So generally, most companies and startups are actually looking at cutting costs and figuring out how to be monetizable. The same goes for us, really. And what we're gunning for in the next couple of years is really a combination of maintaining that growth we've had through COVID, you know, pre-COVID, etc., and trying to make sure that that growth comes hand in hand with building a sustainable business.
Okay.
So a lot of what we do today is about trying to figure out what's the step that we can take so that it's not just throwing money at the problem, right? So I won't name names, but of course the e-commerce space normally grows by incentivizing consumers. You offer a large amount of discounts, you get consumers to come in on the basis of the discount, and then you hope that the lifetime value of that customer is worth that incentive you gave at the start. But in live commerce, it's entirely different. There is zero incentivization ongoing. It's purely through reputation. It's purely through customer loyalty to the influencers and to the live seller. So it's very different in terms of how they grow. And we're not, you know, asking for huge amounts of fundraising to enable incentivization. We're actually asking for that fundraising because we want to make sure that the underlying ecosystem within live commerce itself is robust and it allows for that growth that's going to come, enable it to happen.
But even for the LTV of customers in e-commerce, you could see that trends and evidences have shown time and again. Every time you incentivize and subsidize the cost and pass it over to the consumer, the moment these subsidies are gone, the consumer leaves the ecosystem as well. Because of this whole OPM type of cash handouts that you pass over to the consumer knows no better. I mean, if I order something from a rideshare company and it comes to me at 5 ringgit, for instance, because it's heavily subsidized, the next thing I know, if it's 15 or 20 ringgit, I'm done. I don't need to use that particular rideshare company. I'll use the other rideshare company because substitutes are quite easy. That's for e-commerce, but as you were mentioning, because of live commerce with zero cash incentivizing element happening, do you feel that now we really need to talk about brand affinity, character association of the live sellers with the consumers? It's a lot more human connection. Is that possible? Is that something that is like in that space that you're talking about, where you have to build between the buyer and the seller?
This is very community driven, right? So ultimately, what you're seeing is a movement of small businesses taking matters into their own hands. I don't want to spend marketing budget as a business because I am fighting against the big boys.
Yeah.
But with a small business investing using their own faces, their own personality, connecting to the customers at a personal level, right? It has allowed them to skip this process of needing those incentives. It's allowed them to skip the process of needing to invest heavily in marketing.
Is that farmer's market, something like that, where you really build a relationship between, you know, farmers, I don't remember the term. It's like when it's farmers, like, grow,
yeah,
and they bring it to the market at the car park somewhere.
Correct.
I experienced this when I was in Australia. People actually, I mean, you can buy a bottle of honey from whatever supermarket, or you can buy a bottle of honey from the seller because of the affinity that you have with them. So you're just taking this element and putting it on, I guess, digitizing it and live commercing it.
Yes, and that's true not just in the farmer's market context, right? But it's also about that customer relationship that brands used to be able to build up. So the reason why you buy Coca-Cola today is because they had many years to build up that brand element, right? So for 70 years, 100 years of marketing, what businesses have access to 100 years of uninterrupted TV ads now, right? The amount of advertising has skyrocketed, and your stake in that advertising ecosystem is too small to make a difference.
Yeah.
So the only way that you can really reach out to your customers now is to go through alternative methods like this. And it's actually so powerful that in China, right, the way they launch products now is very interesting. So they use live commerce to launch products. They don't build landing pages. They don't do things like, you know, when Apple launches a new phone, they'll have press releases, they'll have conference, have that, you know, landing page where you can go and sign up or pre-register or whatever. In China, everything, lipstick, cars, doesn't matter what the product is, launches through live first. So as a brand, if you want to get to your consumer, you do a day one launch, whatever it is they are selling will definitely sell out within 10 minutes. Right? So they are using that to essentially build up the interest and show customers from the first day what is the product. There's entire...
Isn't it the same as Tim Cook going on stage and, you know, showing this is the new iPhone?
It's different because for those live streams, there's actually community managers in the background who are answering the questions from that audience during this period and sharing details that would normally not be two-way. But Tim Cook going on stage and talking about a phone is a one-way communication.
Okay. Right?
Live streams are two-way. The customer can type things in the chat, can ask questions, and people actually respond back to them.
I hate to ask this question, but I guess I have to. What about trolls or people that just want to disrupt? Perhaps even competitors trying to just, you know, make noise.
It happens, but ultimately the influencer and content creation space has survived that onslaught, right? It's the same for live selling, effectively. You just need to be able to maintain your reputation. Don't make enemies, right? Ultimately, if you make enemies, trolls will follow you wherever you go.
Yeah. Final question before we go into the break is, do you think that this favors extroverts and people who are a little bit more creative? And what about the quiet ones, the people who are more reserved? Are they on the losing end of this revolution?
It's important to remember that this ecosystem is made up of multiple different parties. It doesn't mean that live commerce succeeding only favors the influencer on stage. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, right? For every live seller today, there's probably about, you know, 10 packers, there's admins who are reading the chat, answering questions, there's an entire ecosystem or community powering this. And it's like running a regular business, right? You have your CEO, like myself, who shows on camera, but underneath I'm creating jobs, I'm having a lot of other people are participating in this ecosystem that I'm creating. So it's important to realize that it favors people in a sense that it favors people who are extroverted in a sense that those people will be ones running on camera. But if you are smart or if you are someone who, you know, is able to participate in this, you get a cut as well. And you know, I've seen influencers who are introverted make a living off this. I have a type of influencer called hands influencer. So
hands?
They sell jewelry and items and cosmetics that you don't need your face for that. You just put the camera against your
whatever
hands.
Whatever works, basically, is what you're
exactly
trying to say.
Right, it's entertaining to people, right? And ultimately, it's about the creativity. There are YouTube channels.
A fetish, if you ask me, but yes, you are.
there are YouTube channels out there where the person creating the channel never shows their face, right? So it's about taking that kind of approach and bringing it into the live commerce industry, essentially.
Okay, one more short break before we conclude our conversation with Wang Ziyang of UpMesh. Thanks for staying on with us. Ziyang, let's talk a little bit more about we don't have much time left, but what the on the ground activities in the four markets that you're doing. How are teams running differently or similarly for the company in trying to grow the business in these four rather diverse markets?
So I think the challenge with Southeast Asia and the reason why there's not been much investment from overseas here, right, is that we are very fragmented culturally, right? We have very different cultures and yet similar at the same time. So when companies try and expand,
I hate it when people say, oh, you know, Southeast Asia, 700 million people, the GDP collectively is this and that. That's not the full story. I mean, it's so different and varied. But yes, sorry to interrupt. Go on.
You know, everything from the population count to the customer behavior to the way that people interact is different in every country. Even the payment gateways they use and the e-wallets you use in every single one of these countries are different, right? Mm. You have Touch and Go here. Touch and Go doesn't really exist outside of Malaysia.
No.
In Philippines, you have GCash. GCash doesn't really exist here.
NetsCard,
so
you name it. Yeah.
Even for a company to try and close these markets and work with them, it's kind of a nightmare. Right, and the way that we believe in this is that in order to grow sustainably throughout the different countries, we need a team on the ground in every single country. And this team is almost like a mini version of my company running there. Their job is to really find out what is it that is different from the other markets, what is learnings that you can take from the other markets to apply here. Right, and these kind of learnings are always about different stages of or time periods in the journey of the consumer as well as the seller, right? So, for example, in Philippines right now, there's not a lot of live selling going on, right? It's actually one of the smaller markets, but they have the most potential in terms of number of people, in terms of the way that they are actually doing live selling now. They're actually selling secondhand goods. But then you pan over to Thailand, and Thailand's actually at a very advanced stage in terms of live selling, right? A lot of their volume moves through social.
I wouldn't know, sorry. This is my first time learning.
Exactly. So a lot of it moves through social and live commerce as compared to normal e-commerce where people are grouping up and buying things in bulk. And that's a phenomenon that people don't know because, you know, it's Thailand, right? It's one country out of the biggest Southeast Asian market. And then you move to Malaysia, right? Malaysia is a market that, while the population size is smaller than some of these countries, it actually has the most potential because internet penetration rate is the highest out of all the Southeast Asian
96%.
So by trying to understand the individual cultures and the
speed, however, is a big problem, by the way. Yeah, penetration is one thing. But understanding it means you require the domestic team to actually be from the domestic market.
Correct. We actually have our team on the ground native to that country. We never ever try and parachute someone in. You know, it's a culture that we try and foster from the ground up.
Fantastic. I wish you all the best. That's our conversation with Wong Ziyang of UpMesh. If you want to learn more about their business, head on to their website and find out more. Also, if you want to learn more about businesses such as this, just head on to astroawani.com and search for Notepad. You can also look for more information on our sister shows, Week Ahead, as well as Niaga Awani, which airs daily at 9 a.m. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.